Beverly Hills 90210 fam.
You know how when they yell cut, they wouldn't stop.
That's interesting.
What?
Yeah.
If you were Donna, what would you have said?
A waitress, rather, call the police, and she was mistaken 90210 for cops.
Along with your host, Charles Rosen.
But look at that, Dean Cake. And Dan probably got the best performance he ever gave.
We're having a meeting here.
Oh, at least there's one person on this Fricata set that knows what they're doing.
Larry Mullen.
I had a friend named Craig Richland. There was still cocaine around and stuff. I always remembered him, and I just kind of thought I would honor my coke dealer.
Get out of here!
Pete Ferrero.
Here's what I learned. It's possible Claire would have gone out with me.
That was your takeaway.
So sit back and relax, because it's, like, totally time for the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Just hold on to me tonight.
Okay, we have all
stuck here.
Cut that one to the wire. Sorry, guys.
All good. We are back here on the Beverly Hills 90210 show on Valentine's Day. I don't know that we've been live for a holiday before, but is this a holiday? I guess it is. Yes. So we are live for it.
Hallmark says it is. It must be.
I was going to say it's definitely one of those holidays.
Yes. Chuck, how are you? What are you and Karen doing today?
I think we're gonna win. We're gonna scoot out somewhere, kind of in the nice part of town, to eat somewhere. We don't have a reservation, so we're bucking all conventional wisdom.
My wife and I are doing the same thing as soon as we're done here.
We're going against the grain,
where you're supposed to have the reservation, the time that you're going, and all that. We have none of that, so we'll see.
Right. It doesn't seem quite as organized this year.
Right. Larry, what are your plans for the day? I saw that beautiful poem.
You know, I wrote a poem, as I do every Valentine's Day, and which is posted on Instagram under at Mambo Chicken. But you know, I had medical appointments today, and my wife has a late one tonight, so we weren't going to do anything. She's going to pick up takeout on the way home.
Is this what I have to look forward to as I get older on the Valentine's Day?
I don't know. Sometimes we have to, but usually we plan ahead because that's how I roll. But no, this year I knew we were kind of, you know, it was just not going to happen.
Yeah, you know, and he's leaving out the whole See's Candy part of it, you know. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah, she does the shit. Well, she just takes care of herself, basically. It's wonderful. I just write the poem.
Brian, what about you? We don't know your relationship status.
I'm happily single right now.
So there's no Valentine's Day plan for you?
Well, this is my Valentine's Day. I'm spending it with you guys.
Oh, that's very cute. That's very nice.
But it should be nice out there. I think it'll be a good adventure for you, for both of you guys with your wives. I wish you well.
Thank you.
Christina Williamson says, "Hi, everyone. I love the podcast. I listen on the treadmill."
Okay.
There's a lot of that happening.
Well, that's good, because we were on a treadmill making the show, believe me. It's really fitting.
Really true.
I used to always think of it, every time we'd start a season, it was Charlie Chaplin in Modern Times, just
faster and faster.
I forget sometimes that we have a very huge audience of people that do not care that we're live. Do not care that we have a YouTube stream. We'll listen to it's a podcast, so they will do that version of it and listen to it on their way to work, on their way to an adventure. Somebody told me that they listened to a whole bunch of them on a very long road trip. So hello to all of you listeners. I know we kind of ignore you guys sometimes because so much visually is happening here.
Well, you know, for you who are listening, you do know that for me, now Larry comes out of theater. There's no question about it. But I came out of radio, and for me, it was and I used to say this, I don't know if in any of our meetings that ever came up, Larry, or you ever remember this, you know, me being uttering this, but the notion being that radio was a more powerful medium because it left it to the audience's imagination. You didn't show them the picture. And so that's how we felt when I was working for NPR and the local there, WBUR in Boston, that you know, it was that you had that kind of kind of inner connection in that way that a podcast would
Yes.
But eventually became, you know.
You know, because I was in Canada in the 70s, we became radio stars. We were on a live national show with this guy, Peter Zosky, who was kind of like, you know, the Larry King of whatever. We were like the resident comedy troupe, and we would do things, you know, reflecting on the news of the day. And then within that, we would also do like radio dramas, and you'd have the guys with the whole sound kit there with the squeaky door and making the footprints right all live, because Canada was really backward. So it was really like the 60s yes. there, even though it was the 70s.
Well, it's interesting that so much of this is coming back around with podcasting and all this stuff. Now, you yes. thought radio was yeah. totally dead, but podcast proves that people want to listen to things still. That they have a lot of places to go, and there's places to listen to things.
Let's not waste their time.
Exactly. Let's see. Catherine West, our friend, says, but it's not the same as being interactive. Love you all. Renee says, I love there's a live video app option. I'd much rather watch it. So we're covering a Valentine's Day episode, which I don't know that there's a lot of in Beverly Hills 90210. Is there a bunch?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about this episode today, getting ready. Like, what are we going to say about this episode? And the one thing I will say about this episode is for Valentine's Day is that this was not a joyous episode at all. The celebratory nature of the holiday was nowhere to be found. At the very least, it was an obligation to help as a fundraiser to, you know, as a charity event.
Yes.
Because love is completely out of the question, except in an idealized way with, you know, Andrea and Peter dancing cheek to cheek, you know, making this soundtrack so expensive that nobody can see this fucking episode. But, you know,
Chuck, though, one thing we should say is that this was a sweeps episode, so it was packed. And so even though it wasn't romantic, I'm sure it has a lot of promotable angles. And Pete has the promo.
I have the promo.
Right.
He hasn't seen it.
Let's see it. Here we go. Here's the promo. Right.
The Sandy Grusha.
How far will Kelly go?
Now you face a difficult test.
To become teacher's pet.
I'll do anything.
A brand new 90210. Then Wednesday.
Here we go.
Kelly's professor is making her break up with Brandon.
What am I supposed to do? Fade away into the sunset? Pretend I don't love you anymore?
What will he make her do next?
I'm telling you, she's being brainwashed.
Aren't you really worried that he's after her body?
A brand new 90210.
Okay.
Interesting.
Okay, they wipe the Finley, you know, the Brandon, the triangle, the villains in there. Yeah, I like it. I like it.
Well, that's the most promotable element. I mean, you know, but it's just, I mean, Kelly Taylor is a sad, lost character in this episode. The one
that we burned her. We burned her.
Literally.
We burned the character.
She's the sad little rich girl. She's that archetype.
But so here's my thing. We start off this episode super, super hot, right? We see Donna and Ray.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about that. What was going on there? I mean,
all over each other. But I want to show it because if I'm looking, I'm sorry, Sandy Grusha, I would never debate your marketing genius. But wouldn't you kind of use this?
Ray, come on! I know you want to.
I do. We can't let this happen right now.
Man, how am I supposed to stop when we're this close?
I mean, for a hot second, I'm like, they're having sex. This is
right. Are we to assume that Donna's naked here? I'm assuming
Donna's naked. I think she is. Yeah. I mean, a bare shoulder to see it.
Well, I didn't think about
Donna,
that.
Donna, what do you think is going on? You roll around in a bed with a guy naked. He's going to want to go all the way.
You know, Catholic girls, maybe, I don't know. You know, she was hearing something, her mother, you know, whatever.
Well, I mean, but that's a great question that Brian asks, Chuck. Do you think that Donna was naked there?
No. I think we need to see it again.
I think she has something around her around the breast.
I'm sure she does. No, I'm not sure.
No, I'm not. I don't think that. I don't think Tori Spelling is naked there.
Oh yeah, Donna. I think Donna is naked. Yeah, this is pretty hot and heavy here.
Yeah, so I think that this is another part of the sadness of it, and so then there's with Tiffany, who definitely, you know, is just this, you know, this almost vamping as a bad girl, as a Bette Noir figure, and gets, you know, poor Ray, you know.
But and Brian, you do bring
sad. I don't know. It's betrayal. It's sadness. It's
this opening scene is very, it's the furthest that we've seen Donna go.
I know.
Oh,
well, because she's in college now. You can't compare it to any of the high school ones. They don't equate anymore.
Larry,
or whatever came after that.
Yeah. Larry, would you have used it?
I think that Sandy wouldn't want to do it because it's too, first of all, it's because it's the character Donna.
Mm.
As opposed to Brandon and Kelly and what was really what they were selling at that point as totally. The A-list stuff. But the other thing is that it nothing, you know, what came of it. I mean, it was just, you know, it was the frustration of it.
True.
It was
it drives him to Valerie. I mean, you know, again, you know, we were, you know, we had, she, it was serving the story. But also it was real, too, because she's got to be faced with this thing. You know, she's now... This is like she's a sophomore in college at this point. And it's hard to keep your virginity. So this was a big test. And she, you know, Ray didn't honor it. You know, Ray was ultimately a bad guy, but he kind of represented the weakest part of everybody, every male of us. You know, that's what happens.
Because at the end of
very immature.
Well, at the end of the day, it's very hard for Ray to do this, to constantly, you know, be, if it probably feels rejected on in some level, but she's just,
you know, he didn't have the deep history like David Silver. He didn't have the deep history like David Silver. So it's just like, what the heck is going on? So it's never going to happen. Like, how could it stop?
Right. So, when she said never.
And wait a second. Let's remember that his mother, Luann, kind of gave him a green light, gave him permission.
Just be discreet.
I do want to show that clip.
Here. I thought you might have that one up there.
I might as well just pulled the episode. There were so many interesting.
Let's see Luann. Good old Luann, straight off the Love Boat.
She's right there. Felice Martin sent her on a cruise for Christmas. It was wonderful.
Real quick.
Carolyn McWilliams, who played the character, just was.
Maggie said the promos bring her back. Lisa says, Happy Valentine's Day, Charles, Larry, and Pete. She didn't say it to you, Brian. So.
Hello. I've heard worse.
Okay. So let's just. Oh, someone said. Maggie says, maybe she was just topless, just going to second base.
Yeah, I think so.
No, I think that looked a lot. That looked a lot more than second base.
Yeah, I think so. Well, maybe it started off, you know, all right, we'll do second base, and then things escalated from there.
Yeah, I think so. I think Ray was, you know, working on the underwear.
I certainly hope Ray announced it that way. We'll do second base the way you said it. Okay, here.
Just about killed me.
Oh, I'm glad you had a good time.
Well, I had the time of my life, thanks to that sweet girl of yours. I picked up a set of earrings in Antigua. I think she's gonna just love them.
Yeah, she loves jewelry.
What's this? Something happened with you too?
Not really. Same old thing.
What's that supposed to mean?
I don't know how to say this, but it's hard when you love someone as much as I do and you can't express it.
Sexually.
Yep.
Now, you listen to me, and you listen good. You don't want to do anything that's going to muck up what you've got going with Donna. A love like that is very rare, very special. And it'd be a crime to throw it all away because you can't control yourself.
I know.
So whatever you do, just be discreet and safe.
And safe.
Okay, 90s, baby. We're the 90s. We gotta be safe.
So she made that okay to happen. That was okay. Ray left that conversation saying, it's okay to cheat on Donna.
Right. Mom. But her underlying purpose is because you don't let this cash cow go. So it wasn't out of any altruistic spot. Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
It wasn't out of that. It was to take advantage of the situation.
Do you all have any Luanns in your life? Someone that reminds you of a Luann type that you ran into? I certainly did. Did you, Larry?
Well, my wife has her side of the family. They're like swamp Yankees in the northeast corner of Connecticut. So there's a little bit of that trailer.
I have a couple of people in my family from one side that certainly fall into that category.
Well, they have the Christmas tree thing, and then they have the pumpkin patch.
What about you, Chuck? Did you have anybody in your circle that was a little Luann?
No, you'd be banished. Real quick. That wasn't going to fit in our paradigms. No.
Oh, that's
a little bit. Now with Karen's family, when we first met, a little bit there were play patches in the valley that were definitely not. My zip codes.
Right, I got you. The big thing that's going on here, though, we started to talk about it earlier, is Finley. Our friend Alan Toy is a huge, huge part of this episode. We get to see the compound. I mean, this is all right out of a great cult story. What did you think of some of that, Chuck? Seeing the opening stuff with Finley, she's getting phone calls. He's trying to pressure her, as the promo says, to break up with her boyfriend.
Well, he's off campus now. That's the thing. I
mean, that's right.
I was going to emphasize the same thing. He's made the the drama. What always interested me about the storyline was to get. Was the idea about, you know, about tenure or being, you know, denied tenure, where's tenure in it? That always was an interesting story to me, because when I was a freshman, I saw a female English teacher be denied tenure effectively because they didn't want to share the money. They didn't want to do it. They didn't want to give her this thing. And there was a lot of drama around it.
Mm.
So I thought, so it's always carried, through into this part of the story. But now he's out of the university. Now he's at the private foundation setting it up. So it's Finley, it's just in transition, and he keeps, you know, the tension alive. And you certainly, by judging from those great promos you showed, you know, they were really focusing on the idea, the underlying subtext that could be going on romantically, these kind of links between Finley and Kelly.
Larry, what is your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that was really working. I mean, look, Cults was a legitimate storyline. Like people, especially someone like Kelly Taylor, who just survived the fire, was in a vulnerable state of mind. You know, Brandon
theory at college.
I think we had done, you know, the emotional reality and state of mind she's in this storyline. I think we earned. I think we earned. So,
because it also came out of academics.
Yes,
right. That's
came exactly. out of a university. One of the reasons the university wasn't happy is because it came out of a university imprimatur.
Yeah, and then the thing with Finley is just, you know, I mean, Alan was fantastic, and I think. He just kind of leapt into the role. And we have all this subtext about, you know, we always imagine that he was, you know, kind of this Svengali, you know, whether they're having sex or not, he's kind of in her head, and he's feeling a need that she has, because she's, you know, she's feeling kind of needy, and Brandon's not feeling it. It's not working right there because she doesn't trust him at this moment.
It's fascinating. There are so many, the story, you know, we always talk about 90210 and its relevancy today. We always ask that at the end of the show, is this episode, does it still hold up? I mean, most of the documentaries, a good portion of documentaries that you would find on Netflix or Hulu or any of those places, have cults in the storyline. Why did this girl get hooked up? How did this happen? You know, so it's still a very relevant possibility of something that is still happening. You know, you watch something like this and say, how can Kelly Taylor get connected and hooked up into something like
that? Yeah. Well, the only cult I wasn't going to touch at all was Scientology.
That's interesting.
That was the one that was right from season one. We weren't talking about that one. And then we end up shooting in their facility. That was real creepy.
Well, someone did ask on Reddit how much.
That was one of the questions.
Yeah. Go ahead, Brian. Ask that question from Reddit.
I can't remember the correct wording, but it was pretty much just along the lines of, you know, was this a reference to Scientology? Was it alluding to Scientology in any way? Which.
Partly, because language changes, and it was inspired by certainly.
Certain of the ways to identify its uniqueness is through.
He's a charismatic character. You know, he's basically Jim Jones. You know, all the people rolled into one.
Yeah,
that was from Donna Martin 93 on Reddit. Just to
thank you, Donna.
Yes. Okay. Let's see some Finley in action.
It's Brandon Walsh again.
Can you take a message?
Can you take the truth?
Yeah, that was nice framing.
Yeah.
I just love that he interrupts the question. He's not being the one asked the question.
I'm not sure.
Well, there's your answer, isn't it?
I know. I've become my own worst limiter.
Exactly.
His own worst limiter.
Everybody drink.
That should be the t-shirt. I've become my own worst limiter.
You can't evolve if you can't reposition yourself.
Funny.
It's just Jules. Everything he says.
But he says it so amazing. Like, I just buy it.
He's incredibly convincing.
Kelly, why aren't you here?
Brandon, from the way things look, I don't think I'm going to get down the hill today.
Not even to man the phones?
Apologize to everyone for me, will you?
I can't believe you're flaking out on this.
Brandon, don't get reflexive on me.
Have you ever said that to someone, Larry, since the show?
No, but feel free to use it. Feel free to use it from now on.
I think everybody...
That's like something that Eric Burton and the Animals would do. A couple of that songs.
I can't exactly be in two places at once now, can I?
I understand that, but we were supposed to do this Valentine's Day thing as a couple.
You know, this started out as your event.
This was supposed to be your Alpha House sorority commitment.
You're a strange one to be talking to me about commitment.
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
The fact that I have to explain it is the reason you and I need to talk.
I mean, anyway, she hangs up on him. He thinks that she's still on the phone, and we get a good classic 90s hang up.
Like Chuck said, it's really sad, Brandon.
Oh, yeah. The whole episode is sad, Brandon.
It's sad, Brandon.
I'm sad, defeated, incapable, Brandon.
Yeah, he can't figure out who he's fighting.
No charm effect, nothing. Got none of his tools working for him.
Well, here's one time his tools are working for him in the episode.
Oh. Donna!
Guys, what are you doing? I know this is Valentine's Day, but could you loosen the lip lock a little bit? You're the student body president. You're supposed to be announcing all the acts and activities and everything going on for the next, 36 hours.
Can you see he's busy?
Well, I hate to bother you two, but I'm not a professional MC. I mean, I have trouble improvising without a script. What am I supposed to say?
David, you're just supposed to say, live from the Peach Pit After Dark, it's California University's telethon for the Pediatric Heart Fund.
You know, that's something we haven't done yet here on this podcast, the telethon. You would have thought of all the different things that we've done, Planet 90210, a telethon feels like maybe the next thing that we should consider.
And at no time did the telethon ever be something that I would be considering. It didn't come up in my head. I don't know about you, Larry.
Probably.
All right, but what about this kiss, Larry? Donna and Brandon.
It's an unusual pairing.
The
kids really liked it. We'll have to ask Jason about that sometime. You know, it was, you know,
They probably enjoyed it, but it didn't have any romantic real linkage to it. So You didn't have that. It was a stage kiss for the moment.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. It felt like you know that this was for like an SNL opening of this telethon. Right.
They really went for it.
Exactly. It's like Live from New York. Exactly.
Larry, what did you think of the kiss, though, despite it not being a...
I thought the kids were into it. I want to know. You should talk to Tori about it sometime. I don't know if they covered this episode on their show.
I think they just recently did. So if somebody knows if she talked about it.
Somebody knows if she talked about the kiss. I'm sure she talked about the kiss with Jason. I would think that it was kind of a long time coming.
It looked good. I thought Donna's kissing was great.
I mean, Donna does a lot of kissing in this episode. She's working it, man.
What I'm saying. The virgin opens up the scene.
We don't see Tiffany. We did save Ray in that we don't see Ray making out with Tiffany.
No, we see the morning after.
That's right. So we didn't sully him in the eyes of Donna's fans. To the extent that it gets reinforced by seeing the dirty deed.
Yeah, we didn't rub our nose in it. Thank you, Jerry Frizzell, for editing, perhaps.
But we do, Donna, the virgin, has the most action going on in this episode. The dry hump to open the episode. And then this
30-second kiss. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, she's carrying the love of
the sex, the hot. Yeah, for sure. I wanted to ask Larry about this scene when Nat finds out that Kelly...
You signed up with Finley and his Institute for the New Evolution.
Ugh. I hate that cult stuff.
It's not a cult, man. It's just a renegade psych teacher without a college.
Oh, that's a relief.
I like that line. You know, now that you mention it, it might as well be a cult, the way he keeps trying to change your personality.
Don't let that happen. I see how it breaks a family of friends. It's not very pretty. Remember Susie French, the artist with the buzz cut that used to work here?
Yeah. She was in a cult?
Her younger sister. She moved down to South America to join some commune. Next thing you know, she's drinking Kool-Aid with Jim Jones in her group.
No kidding.
Brando was a nightmare. The family never recovered.
Well, I don't think Kelly's in anything like that.
That's what Susie said.
Little cautionary tale there.
Doesn't get any more strange.
Susie French was a rock and roll singer, fronted a band. She was a great gal, a friend of mine from Ithaca area, Trumansburg.
And that's why she got mentioned in this.
Again, sometimes you had to clear names. So you knew if you used a friend, it was easy to clear it. You just would ask them first or whatever, and then you wouldn't have any problem. Because we'd always get a legal report after the scripts went in, and then have to clear names. And sometimes it could be a pain in the ass. So you want to basically pre-clear them.
Oh, yeah, what I would always do is misspell them at the end of it. Sorry, I didn't know this sooner at the time. Is you misspell the name and put how it's pronounced. So you don't have to clear if it's the exact name.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
I thought that was really larcenous. I like that. That was two or three times.
Yeah, we always stack the things with our people.
We want to put out friends, and things like that. You know,
I saw a Chiefs episode where Ponch and John were going to go to my boyhood home. You know, they were answering a call to 22 West Lawrence Avenue. Oh my God, that's hilarious.
But we got to give Joey Tada props here because he's really good at delivering information like this. You know, he sells this story about Susie French and what happened with the cult. I mean, at a level where, you're great.
He lived it. He knew it. He's got the stories. Yeah.
You know, the Nat was a father confessor. The advisor was always great. You know, he was used well.
He was in some court pictures.
Again, it just ups the temperature on Brandon's character here. You know, it really could go bad, and of course, it really is going bad.
Right. Well, I mean, this is the thing.
We're gonna have a millennium. Remember that, like, it goes toward a millennium, which is a millennial wedding.
That's right. That's right. That's
so you have to go back. If you are listening to this podcast, we did an awesome episode with Alan, and you guys talked about coming up with the words and all that stuff, and that's a real fun deep dive. And Chip was on that episode with us as well, so that was a fun one. The other thing, of course, is this.
Can I help you?
You're not Jade.
Jesus, we're having a meeting here.
Sorry.
So anyway, like I was saying.
All right, there's a lot to add. There are lots to unfold here. You and Aaron.
What a sad thing there.
Well, I love seeing you in this. How did this happen?
Well, I'll tell you, I always envisioned that when he would be going on his retirement circuit and being honored and feted, that they'd always pull out this clip.
It makes sense, you know.
However, the one thing that then, of course, you have to have, of course, are those dinners where they honor and fet you. And he didn't have any dinners to honor and fet him because he wasn't that kind of guy, to be truthful. You know, he didn't engender those kind of relationships. He did some of it. He would go, you know, to the events, or he'd buy a table in this. But he didn't really like this, you know, stuff so much. So he wasn't, you know, in the trading of that,
right?
Yeah. You know.
Who wrote this that he would be in this scene? Is it?
Oh, I asked him if he would do one with me. It would be for posterity. And at this point, I had just either it was right before I announced I was leaving, or I had just done it. So this was one of the last times we kind of spoke. Until really near the very end of it, the run for me. Also, because I had a pilot with Chip, I was supervising Chip on a project that you had. We were going through the spelling company, and they didn't really want it. Aaron, when it all said and done, Fox would have loved to have done it. Aaron didn't want it, so we didn't.
But so you're sitting in the car with him then, and it's, you know, there is this awkwardness of the fact that you have said that you're leaving the show. Was that any of that come up, or was it staying in character as businessman number limo man number two?
No, I mean, one of the things about people Aaron could be charming. It was charming. He could be charming. I mean, he could do small talk. We could get by. I sat next to him at the Golden Globes. He had fired me the day before. Are you talking to me? Is that just coincidence, or is that the man was a total sadist? You know,
right. Mm-hmm.
But you know, those were. I got through that. I'm going to get through this. You know, but it wasn't. You know, by this point, he wasn't happy with me, and he pretty much let me know that for the rest of my life.
Did you remember this line? Was that hard? We're having a meeting here. You're not acting. You don't act on the show on a regular basis. You know what I mean? It's only one line.
Oh, we're all ham bones. We all could do that. It's just like, Larry, shut up, get out of here.
But did Mr. Spelling have a tough time with it?
No,
he was an actor originally.
That was his first thing. He loved.
But we don't really ever see him on the show ever before, so it was a cool nod. I liked it. I loved it.
I didn't expect. I mean, the one thing is that I always liked this, and there was one other guy, and we were leaving the same day, and we both kind of acknowledged this, that almost without exception, I worked for the Spelling Company 5 years. And the executives that worked at the company, almost without exception, were at one point escorted out of the building by security. And after it happened the first time, I thought to myself, my goal is that nobody is ever going to escort me out of this building. I'm just walking on my own, you know, walking on, hey, walking on. You know. And I did that, and so did this one other guy who was in the finance side. You know, it was a rough and tumble company in its own way.
I'm sure you had close calls there, Chuck, where you almost got escorted out.
Well, it felt like it once there at the end. Yeah, near the end it did. I skirted the white water. I did.
Maggie says that the girls did cover this, and Tori mentioned that how she always remembered her dad with the pipe. And he does have the pipe in this.
Yeah. Oh, he said that's exactly. I'm looking at him right now. I'm looking at my picture we did, and there's right behind Larry, and you know Mr. Scully's holding his pipe.
Yeah, I smoked a pipe then too.
Did you smoke a pipe ever with Mr. Spelling?
Right, smoke pipes, you know.
Mr. Spelling have smoked a pipe together somewhere. Two of you talking ideas.
You know, possibly in some meeting or whatever. Yeah, possibly. You know, you could smoke in the building then. You know, Chuck smoked cigarettes. He snuck cigarettes. They all did.
That's interesting. What a different time.
Spelling had cigarettes out. He was the last one to do that.
I think Steve smoked cigarettes. Yeah, and Jessica did too, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Simon, our friend, said he also said earlier that he watches us every time that we're on. He stays up for it, so thank you for that. And Valerie looked especially smoking hot in this episode.
Oh, absolutely.
I have to agree. Power suit in the hotel.
The doctor.
I love a power suit. So let's take a look at.
Somehow I must have left my lights on. My battery's dead.
Need a lift or something?
No, I got cables. I just need someone to give me a charge.
Well, I can do that. We don't need cables.
What'd you have in mind?
Hopefully the same thing you do.
Be discreet.
Discreet. Well, he's not. That's the wrong person to be discreet with. He did not get. He did not listen to his mother's advice. Really,
probably the first time he made this mistake. He didn't realize who Valerie is, and she's just going to use it against him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. He's just not too familiar with her, and her games.
A truly damaged person. I wish Tiffany. Now I've been following her. She's been so delightful on social media. She's celebrating her turning 50 in a different ways. And we even seen pictures of her husband actually. And
maybe that's the route, Larry.
She's loosening up. I mean, we got to go back at her and try.
Maybe
to get
we
her.
Have to reverse course and go for the husband.
You know, she should at least explain.
Try to get him on the podcast.
Why she won't come on?
Yeah. Exactly. I was going to mention something about this. Oh, so there is the Finley stuff, but there's a lot of sexy stuff happening here. You know, you've got Valerie and Ray hooking up. And I'm going to show the Andrea clip here, but she's in literally fantasy land. So she's they run into each other on this double date. The actress that plays Peter's wife is annoying, or the character is. Her voice is irritating, and they go into this.
Collection. It was beautiful. We're at shopping on Fifth Avenue. Now, the saleswoman comes up to me, and she tells me that I'm wearing the wrong makeup for my coloring.
Shall we dance, Ginger?
I'd love to.
I'm gonna mute this so you guys will know what's happening right now is that Andrea and Peter are dancing to a song that if we play on YouTube will shut us down immediately. So what song is this?
You know, but I mean, they just went to see this movie, I believe. So it really sets the fantasy up.
They're both having it's the Fred and Ginger fantasy.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for clarifying that. I think I missed that.
Oh, song. Everybody who knows anything about the movies knew all about that, Pete. I think I missed that.
Busted, yeah. Because later they both have, say, when Peter calls her and they're talking about this, he says that he had the same fantasy
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
By the way, this is cut out of the DVDs.
Oh, no. Well, of course. Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, that's the fantasy? Oh.
Yeah, all you see is Peter and Andrea inching their hands closer together, and then the part where Jesse interjects and grabs her hand.
Just great.
So have you seen it? Were you watching the DVDs for this?
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, I have the DVDs, and like I said, that's just completely cut out.
Yeah.
Well, I'll start sending you all the episodes.
Yeah, the soap that ones are more completely, so they have the, they're better.
They left everything in. Yeah, they didn't touch anything. Yeah.
That's insane to me. That's, it's just annoying because it's such a big part of why these two people are connected. You literally see the visual of it.
Well, it just diminishes.
Like you said, you have the whole callback afterwards when Peter gives her the call and says, "I had the same fantasy of the Fred and Ginger."
You didn't know what you were doing and you didn't show it. It insults the intelligence of the audience and also the writers who wrote it.
That's the moment where I go, oh, I must have fallen asleep. I must have fallen asleep for those 20 seconds and 30 seconds.
Exactly. This was all good because it was important. It kind of confirms this path that Andrea's, this dangerous path Andrea's taking. We progressed their storyline, basically.
Is the song Pennies from Heaven?
No.
That's not the name of that song.
Every time it rains pennies.
That was it?
Was that
Cheek to Cheek is that song.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just to let everybody know that sometimes YouTube pulls our clips in line of what 90210 deals with. Sometimes they stop the feed when we play a clip or something along those lines. It takes a week. We have to go through a process and then they release it. And I get an email. I just got an email today that like a whole bunch of episodes they released are the hold on our episodes. So well, like,
how can people do music on TikTok? I don't understand.
I don't understand it. Yeah. So, I mean, you'd think by now we have done this is the 165th episode of this podcast. You would think by now that somebody that's there gets the letter and says, oh, why don't we just allow it? Always allow. You know what I mean? Instead of every week.
Right. Having to go through the trouble of doing the same thing over and over again.
Every week. It's okay. Let's see if I speaking of clips, do we have anything else? The only thing else, and I'm just not going to play it, but the big thing that what Steve is attempting to do to track you guys down is that he's trying to get Jade to be on this broadcast.
Telethon.
So talk to me about how Jade came into play. We have to get into that. And the writing of that song, because this is another reason why we thought maybe the episode was not available to people. Is the Jade stuff in there, Brian, on the DVD?
Yeah, their whole performance is on the.
Yeah, I would think the company owns the song, so I don't think that would be a problem.
Okay. So getting Jade.
Do you remember, Chuck?
Well, Jade was a giant recording artist. And they were the ones who were going to record this song that Kenny Miller wrote and knew that he could sell it. And I told you the demo was just popping. The demo was really stronger as it can be. It just really went to the edges of what that song was. And this one was much more staid, but the whole album was kind of a poppy one. There was the only one I really liked a lot was Kathy Dennis. That's why I feature that so much in the graduation.
Jeff, you're talking about the music from 90210 cassette.
The 90210 the giant cassette that they released. Yeah. And we had the other 92X that they did. There were some nice tunes on it, but it was very pop. was very pop and mainstream. You know, they didn't want to touch anywhere where grunge was going. They didn't want to go this way or that way. So the only one that really had a dance feel to it was Why. Yeah. You know, it just wasn't that much, you know, in that regard, I felt.
It's funny you mentioned that, Chuck. This is going on a tangent, but I always thought it was funny. Melrose Place.
Welcome to the club. Welcome to the tangent club. We all do it. Yeah.
I was just saying, Melrose Place, I mean, their soundtrack is very different, very more rock-oriented. I mean, yeah, like the likes of Paul Westerberg for The Replacements, Divinyls, Letters to Cleo, much more of an alternative sound on there as opposed to...
I didn't realize Melrose Place had an album or a CD.
They have two. They have the one from probably the first three seasons, and then a jazz one. Because in the later part of the series, they have a jazz club. That's part of it.
They just copied everything.
No, they had like after dark.
Everything just sounds like. Didn't they copy the cult story?
Yes,
they did.
Right after this, I remember hearing that, and I remember running into like Brett Garwood, the one of the Spelling employees. He said, "Oh, Melrose is doing a cult story now too."
So this was
we did ours for at least a cycle of a sweep cycle before them.
Wait, let's just gotta have a second for Brent Garwood here. Just
Brent Garwood,
really
doing the ratings every day at 11 o'clock.
He was Mr. Spelling's first bodyguard.
Oh wow!
And he had a lurch quality to him by the time I got to know him.
Me too. Yeah, he was very beloved, though. I really liked
him. He was beloved, and he'd fill out the ratings, and he'd drop them off. He'd get the ratings every morning. You get the variety every morning. You know, it was show business.
Were there? I mean, that's funny that this is the guy that would bring the ratings. I'm sure some days he didn't want to bring them. I'm sure.
No, of course, he always brought them. No, he loved doing that job.
Oh, it was the business. No, it was.
Yeah, I know.
You're backing out of the business. Yeah. You know, Mister was this. They were about the business. That's for sure.
I had a question about Jade. So the song was written for them to perform on the show.
No, to do the album, and then we put them on the show. So we could promote the song and use it as part of the telethon.
And we learned on the Patreon that Ken Miller is the person that wrote the song.
Yeah,
that's right. Because he was a songwriter as well as other. He had a lot of skills. He was an editor. He was a songwriter. But he was the post-production head of Spelling and did all the not only creative, but the finance stuff. And then he did for 90210, he was a producer and he did all the music.
He did the music deals.
And he let it go to seed.
Maggie says their music sucks too, same as 90210. I think she's referring to Melrose Place must have a whole issue with replacement music as well.
Yeah.
That's what she's talking about.
Ah, probably.
Yeah. You know, funny enough, like I said, this is something that's jarring to me. And on the Melrose DVDs, all the performances, because you got a lot of jazz artists that performed on Melrose Place, all of those are still on there, which is bizarre.
What about Jamie Walter's performances on the DVDs?
I think you get like one or two, and but most of them are cut.
When we first see Jamie in Rave On, he plays Hold On, Donna sees him there. Is that there?
I don't think so. I think there's one Peach Pit performance.
How did she meet him?
And then when he does the just Halloween up. Episode.
Larry just showed up.
He says, what, Brian?
So there's one Peach Pit performance, I'm pretty sure. And then when he sings at the little Halloween thing for the kids.
But you missed this whole thing about this character, which is that he's a musician and he's singing these beautiful love songs for his girlfriend. Yet you don't. So when he gets abusive, all you see is this horrible person, not the guy that sings at the Halloween party with little kids. Is what I'm.
I researched through ASCAP and BMI who publishes the song, and there are about six people with pieces of that song. Hold On, that's all I could figure. You know, I mean,
you do get the
Steve Tyrell.
The season 7 Vegas song is there though. When he's in Vegas performing, that's there.
That's a twist to me. Yeah, I wonder if somebody.
You brought him back for season 7, Larry?
Yes,
I don't remember, but yes, Chuck, we did. Yeah, I do remember because Zach Throne played in the band. I think we still owed him some money or whatever. He owed us a little commitment. We thought we could make something work. We wanted to basically try to redeem his character a little bit too.
Yeah, he's engaged and doing a lot better than where he was before.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we caught him on the road to recovery. We didn't want to, like, totally ignore him.
The other clip I had for this episode that we're covering is at the end of this, Donna becomes a detective and is asking why was the truck left in the parking lot. She's starting to ask him the questions that you would normally ask someone who says that the truck broke down and doesn't have an explanation for where they are. And Valerie comes in and says, oh, she's so jealous of them because she sees them taking a cute picture together. And that's sort of the tease that Valerie knows what's going on with, or that Donna knows, or that Valerie knows what's going, you know, that she's revealing, like, that she's going to not make this easy for Ray.
Well, Valerie was a booty call before the word was invented. She doesn't want to be his girlfriend.
Right, but then she
wants to control him,
Which we see in the next episode, I think. And then we do get to the end of this, and Brandon is working it out with Nat that someone has to be able to talk to Kelly off a ledge here, and it's going to be Dylan. Dylan's the only person to. And in the promo, as we saw, you know, Dylan and Brandon have that conversation about him going to talk to her. What did you think of that, Larry?
Oh, no. I mean, it's a good use. You know, again, you know, it's another triangle, Dylan, Brandon, and Kelly. And it's where we want to be with this. We want to get everyone, you know, vertically integrate this story, the characters into the story. We want to get Dylan into it now, too, because, you know, that's already, you know, him and Brenda, you know, they really drove a lot of the action when they were on the show. So you want Dylan to be totally invested in this, in the Finley stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. I mean, Brandon having to go to Dylan to help him. You know, Brandon is the boyfriend, right? So It's for him to have to go to Dylan to try to get Kelly's mind out of this cult.
Do we have that one?
I have that. I do have that clip, but I'm just not, you know, with everything getting disconnected here.
Why bother?
I'm not even going to bother to play it.
All right. Is this before they had the sweating it out, the sweat lodge story? I can't remember.
That happened before this.
Yes, that happened before.
I think so. Okay. I think so.
But again, I mean, you know, Kelly, you know, rejected both of them, and now Brandon's back with her. So, I mean, you know, Dylan has nobody here, don't forget. He's, you know, he knows he can have Valerie, but he kind of love-hates her.
Brian,
He knows better. He knows better than to go too deep with her.
What other Reddit questions did you have?
Do you have them to pop up on the screen? Or
I didn't pop them on the screen. No, but I have them here. If you want me to read them out loud, that's usually your department. But I'm happy to do it if you'd like me to.
Well, I can probably pop them up. All right, let's see. Donna Martin 69 asks, "I'm a big fan of the podcast. I rewatched this episode last night. My favorite seasons are the earlier years, but there are some great episodes in the latter years as well. This is one of them, in my opinion. Do you agree that this is a great episode? And if so, what is it that makes it special from your perspective?"
Oh, good question.
Larry, you want to go first?
Well, you know, I mean, it's an episode that served a lot of stories. And again, it was a sweeps episode, meaning that it's kind of like the money ball of our seasons, where the advertising rates are set. So you have to have real promotable stuff to grab the eyeballs. Every other network is coming at you with their promotions and special stuff. And it's, you know, it's really very, very competitive. So I think in that sense, it delivers lots of promotable things. We saw the promos. And I mean, you know, you see some stuff. I mean, it does have the theme of Valentine's Day. But like Chuck said, it's a sad take on Valentine's Day, but it served the storylines and builds up during our sweeps week. This was the first episode of February sweeps. So there's three more to come. So whatever we were doing, probably we were getting ready to climax the, you know, bringing Dylan into the Finley story. So that has got to be the next couple of episodes, that. And then you've got, you know, the Ray and Donna stuff. I think we go to a song of my mother, where David tries to find his mother in the streets of Portland pretty quickly after this. And yeah, I mean, you know, we're building here. So I'm happy with that. but it's not. I don't consider it a great episode. No.
Well, too sad. Just as well, it's one of the good ones. It's got its moments.
There's a lot of good building blocks, though. Here, you know, there's a lot of good setup. You know, some episodes need more setup than anything else. I mean, so there's
launching the sweeps episode. It's the money ball, the ones to come.
Yes.
You know, everybody's got hit.
What else do you have, Brian?
This is another one from Donna Martin 69. She says, one more, although it's not specific to this episode. Regarding Val, what made you choose for her to be from Buffalo and to have attended University of Buffalo? I went to SUNY Buffalo in the 90s, and we watched your show faithfully over there.
That's nice to hear.
Oh, well, Chuck and I created that somehow in a room one day. We just thought Buffalo would be kind of interesting. I don't know. I mean, it was close to Minnesota, like in temperature or something. Weren't the Walshes? Or Jim Walsh was originally from Buffalo, and they were friends with the Valerie's family.
I don't know that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was really it. I think Jim had spent some time in Buffalo. I think I had been referenced earlier.
My nephew were living there.
That's where it came from then, Chuck.
No, they weren't. No, I'm wrong. I'm getting my years mixed up. They weren't living there at the time. They lived there after the time. Buffalo's just kind of cool. It's on the border. Yeah. The Bills were always in the Super Bowl back then. You know,
well, you made everyone at that college and very happy.
Coming to Beverly Hills from Buffalo, we could do kind of a unreliable narrator. You know, think that she's impressed, and then at the end of the episode, we show that she's much cooler than they are, and wicked.
Exactly.
Catherine West says no. They lived together in Minnesota, then they moved to Buffalo.
Oh,
okay. So
thank you.
Fact check. I think you have one more, Brian, right?
Yeah. Oh, this is a good one, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is from user I write Sin's Not Comedy. He says, I work as an advocate for people with disabilities, and about 10 years ago, I ran into a series of old training videos, probably from either the late 80s or 90s, hosted by Alan Toy. While outdated now, the training served the purpose at the time to promote inclusion and independence. I always liked Finley as the villain. Was the role written for the cult leader to use a wheelchair, or was he cast simply because he had the best mix of charisma and creepiness for the part? Related, people with disabilities were often written as sympathetic characters, and it was cool and progressive to have a bad guy with power over others use a wheelchair. I'm just curious to any and overall comments the hosts have related to this, and would also like to applaud their inclusivity.
There you go.
Well, great. Well, Alan Toy had a personal good relationship with Paul Wagner.
Well, I was going to say Paul Wagner.
So I guess I'm sure there were other actors who came in for it, and I guess there would have to be. But at the same time, yeah, this role was pretty much written for him. And I would remember so well is him use and continue to always use his chair as a point of power in the room. Yeah, it's a very interesting, interesting.
It was Paul Wagner who was really behind this. And once we realized, in our sick minds, sort of Chuck, our bent minds, we liked the idea of someone in a chair being the villain because it was a fresh take on the character. And obviously, Alan liked it too. He really went all in on it.
Yes, he liked it.
But really, Paul Wagner was the advocate there. And he really believed in accessibility for actors.
That's great. Well, I mean, Alan Toy is incredible as Finley. If you go back and listen to the episode where he was on, people were freaked out by him when they run into him. So, credit to his incredible work. And he's done a lot of other things. You know, we saw him, I don't know, on TV a couple of years ago in Annie, right? I think
He plays Daddy Warbucks. He plays Daddy Warbucks.
So sure. He's still working and really.
Oh, I played FDR. He played FDR. Sorry.
He played FDR. Okay. I think we've covered everything about this episode. I'm not sure that there's anything else to look into. But overall, you guys say good.
Good.
Yeah.
Not like great.
But more like Purdy in the Super Bowl, not like Mahomes. Good,
All right. Well, this has been this week. We'll be back again next week for something. I'm not sure what yet. But I think we're coming up on the anniversary of an episode that Chuck and
I watched. Yeah, I've been waiting to do that one. I can't wait. And it'll be our way to salute our friend David Gale, actually, too.
Yes, so we will be covering that. That's the Palm Springs episode, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Fling in Palm Springs. Also, maybe we'll bring Maggie on since you you wrote that story slam where Maggie had the continuation from that.
Maybe we'll have to redo it.
Yes. All right, guys, this has been great. We will all be back next week. A happy Valentine's Day to all of our listeners, to each of our wives and relationship people, and Brian's friends as well. And I hope you all have a great holiday today.
Bye-bye. Bye.